Hello and welcome to this implementation podcast from NICE on the clinical guideline idiopathic pulmonary fibrosis. We will be focusing on the importance of this guideline to GPs. I'm Katie Worrell, implementation advisor for this guideline, and with me is Dr. Lewis, GP and medical advisor. Dr. Lewis was also a member of the guideline development group who developed this guideline. During this podcast, we will refer to idiopathic pulmonary fibrosis as IPF. This implementation podcast about the NICE clinical guideline on idiopathic pulmonary fibrosis has been developed specifically for GPs. Dr. Lewis, why is this podcast important to GPs?
Breathlessness and cough are symptoms that are frequently encountered in general practice. It's important that idiopathic pulmonary fibrosis is considered as a potential cause. This podcast will remind GPs about IPF and the clinical features and why it's important to be aware of IPF. The role of palliative care in supporting people with IPF will be discussed, and the podcast will also provide a briefing about the implication of the NICE guideline on specialist IPF services.
Brilliant, thank you very much. What is the incidence of IPF?
There are more than 5,000 new cases of IPF in the UK each year. To put this in perspective, it's useful to make an approximation to the incidence of lung cancer. Experts on the GDG estimate that a GP surgery of 10,000 patients will on average have 5 new lung cancer cases per year and just under 1 patient per year with IPF. It's possible this condition is underdiagnosed and the true incidence of IPF is greater than this.
What is IPF?
IPF is a chronic progressive fibrotic interstitial lung disease of unknown origin. Idiopathic pulmonary fibrosis is the most common form of interstitial lung disease. The other common interstitial lung diseases include sarcoidosis and extrinsic allergic alveolitis. The clinical guideline outlines the specialist assessment for everyone with suspected idiopathic pulmonary fibrosis. This will help exclude alternative diagnoses, including lung diseases associated with environmental and occupational exposure, connective tissue diseases, and drug-related pulmonary fibrosis. Despite the significant burden of disease caused by IPF, there's currently no established framework within the NHS for its diagnosis and management, thus creating an environment in which significant variations in clinical care may occur.
I understand that the symptoms and signs of IPF can be attributed to more common conditions such as heart failure or COPD. This may lead to a delay in diagnosis and may result in inappropriate treatments, delay in appropriate treatments, and deprive the patients of the appropriate advice and support, and delay the identification of reversible causes of fibrosis. Dr. Lewis, what are the signs and symptoms of IPF that GPs and other healthcare professionals need to look out for?
IPF is rare in people younger than 45. The median age of presentation is 70 years. Most people with idiopathic pulmonary fibrosis experience symptoms of persistent breathlessness, which may initially be only on exertion. Persistent cough is a common symptom and can be with or without sputum. Over time, these symptoms are associated with a decline in lung function and reduced quality of life. On examination, clinicians need to be aware of IPF when assessing patients with bilateral inspiratory crackles or finger clubbing. If spiratory has been undertaken, the pattern may be normal or impaired. If impaired, it's usually with a restrictive pattern, but sometimes with an obstructive pattern. The guideline recommends that for people presenting with these clinical features, clinicians should consider idiopathic pulmonary fibrosis, and similarly when considering a chest x-ray or referring to a specialist. The guideline development group discussed that in addition to the symptoms and signs outlined in the recommendation, people suspected of IPF may have normal oxygen saturation at rest, but typically this falls on exertion. It's also important to note that around two-thirds of people with IPF are smokers, and IPF often coexists with chronic obstructive pulmonary disease. With reference to your question where you identified that the symptoms and signs of IPF can be attributed to other common conditions, experts in the field believe that it's important that GPs are aware of this. It would be sensible for clinicians to reconsider the diagnosis for patients who are being treated for other conditions with similar clinical features to IPF and who are not improving as expected.
We've talked about the importance of early and accurate diagnosis. What are the benefits of this?
The initial identification and assessment of possible interstitial lung disease in primary care is a key aspect in the clinical pathway of people with IPF. People with suspected IPF can then be referred to secondary care to establish the diagnosis and to enable initiation of appropriate clinical management. For people with IPF, an earlier diagnosis would allow for best supportive care, specialist monitoring, and potentially may increase the proportion of patients eligible for a transplant. In addition, the Guideline Development Group considered the implications of inappropriately treating people for other conditions whilst IPF remained misdiagnosed. By recognising IPF, discussions with the GDG suggested that GPs will be able to avoid prescribing, for example, diuretics for presumed cardiac failure, steroids for COPD, or antibiotics for misdiagnosed recurrent infection.
Thank you very much. This guideline has implications for specialist services. Please can you provide a brief resume of the notable changes to practice for secondary care that GPs should be aware of?
The guideline contains recommendations in the following areas: diagnosis of IPF, information and support, prognosis, management. So for management, we're talking about pulmonary rehab, best supportive care, disease-modifying pharmacological interventions, lung transplantation and ventilation. And the guideline also addresses review and follow-up. I'd encourage all GPs to have a look at the clinical guideline and NICE pathway. For me as a GP, a few areas stood out. The guideline clarifies the place of disease-modifying treatments in IPF. The guideline identifies a number of drugs, including azathioprine and prednisolone, that have been used in the past for lung fibrosis and are still used for some types of interstitial lung disease. But following a review of the evidence, they are no longer recommended to modify disease progression in idiopathic pulmonary fibrosis. Although not explicit in the guideline, I would anticipate that any review of these treatments to modify disease progression would be undertaken in the specialist setting. Also, moving on to ventilation, as a GP, it's useful to be aware of the poor outcomes associated with mechanical ventilation for people with IPF. It may influence our admission decisions and the information that we provide to patients and carers. Regarding the service model, I've spoken to colleagues in the specialist services. There is notable change in the shift to service delivery to one involving multidisciplinary teams with a central supportive role for nurse specialists. Through the economic modelling for the guideline, it was anticipated that in order to implement the recommendations, the diagnosis and management of IPF would be delivered via a series of interstitial lung disease networks.
Thank you very much. Having read in detail about this condition, the one thing that struck me was the fact that the median survival for people with IPF in the UK is approximately 3 years from the time of diagnosis. This means that referral to palliative care at the appropriate time is an important part of the pathway. Where do you see the GP's role in relation to this?
This is an important area. It was felt that currently not all people with IPF have access to the services offered by multidisciplinary palliative care teams. The guideline makes a number of recommendations about access to palliative care services and specifically recommends that if a patient is breathless at rest, then clinicians should consider, among a number of other things, the person's psychosocial needs and offering referral to relevant services such as palliative care. It's important that GPs recognise the need for timely referral to palliative care services and support the multidisciplinary team in facilitating this.
We've gone into lots of detail in this podcast. Dr. Lewis, please can you summarise the key points GPs need to remember?
Clinicians are reminded to be alert to the fact that the signs and symptoms of IPF can be attributed to other common conditions. When assessing a patient over 45 years who has persistent breathlessness on exertion, persistent cough, bilateral crackles or finger clubbing, it's important to be aware of IPF. Clinicians can then consider requesting a chest X-ray or referring on to a specialist.
Thank you very much, Dr. Lewis. We hope that you'll find the information in this podcast useful in helping you implement the guidance in practice. For more information about the NICE clinical guideline on idiopathic pulmonary fibrosis, including access to the NICE implementation tools which can all be adapted for local use, please visit our website www.nice.org.uk. Please let us know what you thought about this podcast by completing the short questionnaire accessible on the podcast page or by emailing us implementation@nice.org.uk.